Well, this podcast, Chris, would have been the podcast that we would have done where we'd be really excited about going to Eurovision, and we would have been leaving for Rotterdam very soon, and the semi-finals would have been about to start. Oh. And what a difference we are now, the reality we're now living in.
That's true. But Martin, I've got some good news for you. There's still plenty of Eurovision excitement coming up in the next few weeks. And on this episode, we've got plenty for people to be excited about on Nullpoix.
Yeah, a very warm welcome to Nullpoix. My name's Martin.
And I'm Laura, or Cress, as Martin likes to call me. That's my surname. You might be wondering. I just thought I'd slip that in because it never gets an explanation. My surname is Cress, so there you go.
Thank you for clearing that up, Cress. Well, we are just two people, friends, you may even say, from the UK, and we really, really like Eurovision. We don't claim to know a huge amount about it, but we really enjoy it, and we like talking about it, and that's what this podcast is all about, celebrating the madness that is the Eurovision Song Contest, and that is what we intend to do for the next little while. And we've got something very exciting coming up very soon.
We do. Well, I was talking about, you know, what can you do if you're a big Eurovision fan, but obviously Eurovision's been cancelled this year. Well, there's plenty of events going on, including, if you are quite into Eurovision, you may have been to something called Wee Wee Jam before, which is something that the blog Wee Wee Blogs holds every year. It's normally in the host city where it's going on. It's a big event before the actual final of the Eurovision. This year, obviously, that can't happen in Rotterdam. But William Lee Adams, who is the founder, editor of Wee Wee Blogs, is still holding an event. We've got more on that a little bit later. We'll be chatting to him, Martin. We're going to have a chat with William. He's basically, I would say, one of the world's biggest Eurovision fans, and it's one of the biggest Eurovision websites in the world, I would say.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I think we've done well. We've done good on the podcast today, as you'll hear when we chat with William in just a second. But first, to some very exciting news. And if you're listening to the last podcast, you will know that we were getting a little bit, what's the word? Downbeat.
Crestfallen.
Angry. Raging at the fact that the BBC in the UK was not, we didn't think, going to show the Eurovision Shine a Light programme, this replacement Eurovision broadcast being put on by the EBU. We didn't think we were going to get to see it in the UK on the main channel. We thought we were going to have to go and watch it on the BBC iPlayer. But there is exciting news today.
There is indeed. So now, obviously, they've heard the podcast, Martin, and they decided they made an error. And, you know, thanks, BBC, for checking in. They've decided they will be showing ESAL, Eurovision Europe Shine a Light.
Oh, you almost did it.
As it's called.
You almost did it.
I went a bit Sean Connery there. Shine a light.
The Shine a Light. Oh, no. I did an Irish accent.
Not again.
Oh, no.
If you heard last episode, probably best you didn't, to be honest. But there was a terrible Irish accent there. And I do, actually, I'd like to take this moment to make a public apology to Ireland. And Katrina and the Waves as well.
Because you were trying to do a Canadian accent and you did an Irish. And I was trying to do Scottish and I did Irish.
Yeah. Something about, I do apologise to all our Irish fans. But anyway, ESAL, Eurovision Europe Shine a Light, there you go, is now going to be broadcast on BBC One. It's not going to be on the iPlayer. It's going to be straight after the BBC One special, Eurovision Come Together. They're both going to be on BBC One on, obviously, the 16th of May, when the final would have been, which is great. It's great that so we can watch both. We don't have to choose because there's this awkward kind of two children syndrome of which one do we love the most and which are we going to watch at the sort of right time. But now we can watch both. And it's interesting, Martin, that the BBC One event, this one-off special, is going to have a live vote element.
Interesting. And I wonder why that is, why they were holding back on maybe doing the EBU one, because the EBU one won't. And they've been very, very clear about that. They don't want any element of competition in it at all. Interesting.
None.
That the BBC one does, I guess, to give a bit of an idea of what the UK public would have chosen as its favourite song.
Indeed, because it says here, basically, they'll take part in a live vote to crown their favourite Eurovision performance. It's interesting, though, what it says, from an eclectic shortlist compiled by experts and celebrity superfans. So we probably won't be seeing all of the songs Whether it's even, are they the songs from this year? I would assume so. But maybe it's just we crown our favourite Eurovision song of all time. It doesn't make it specific.
No, and you wonder whether they will be trying to do something slightly different considering they're now broadcasting both of them at the same time. If you've got one show that's looking at all the songs from this year, followed by another show that's looking at all of the songs from this year, you might get just a little bit bored if you were...
Also, Graham Norton is also in ESAL as well. He's popping up in that too.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. They were like, oh, let's get Graham Norton on it again. So maybe that's why the BBC were like, oh, okay, fine. We'll have to make this a different time.
Here's a quote from Graham Norton. Eurovision offers real escapism for people, not for Graham, who is very much trapped in it.
He cannot escape. Do you think that was his cry for help, just for if anyone noticed?
Eurovision offers real escapism for people, which is something we need more than ever throughout these times, which is what people say when they can't say the global coronavirus pandemic. This year, people at home can celebrate the amazing spirit of the event and hopefully get a chance to take their mind off the current situation. Again, just... Call it a global pandemic.
Off
what it
now.
Is.
Just say now.
Yeah.
Off now.
Yeah. But anyway, I'm very pleased about that. Very pleased indeed.
Yeah. And to be honest, you know, the BBC seem to be doing lots of other things as well. BBC Four is doing something called Eurovision at 60. There's lots of things going on the radio as well. So for all these sort of naysayers saying, oh, you know, the public broadcaster not really bothering. Actually, I think the BBC have pulled out the bag here. It seems like they're doing a lot. And of course, if you're not listening in the UK, I would suggest you go on Eurovision.tv's website, because they've put up a whole page of what every public broadcaster is doing alongside their own event. Because quite frankly, it's a lot. So we're not going to go into it.
No. And for any reason, your own broadcaster is not showing the event, or you live, of course, outside the EBU and you're not watching it at all, then you can go onto YouTube and they are streaming it live there. So plenty of ways
there
to watch.
Go.
So it better be good.
It better. And also, you know, what you could do is just listen to all of our podcasts. One, you know, from the beginning. That could be a little...
You could. You could do that. You'd be weird, but you could do it.
That would be a little Eurovision event for you if you wanted to just sit at home on your own, listen to our podcast.
That would be ill-advised, I'd say. Ill-advised.
Yeah. Martin, I have to say we've got a very special guest to chat to this episode, because obviously we're in the lead up to what would have been Eurovision 2020. So we've been thinking about, well, since that's not happening this year, what else can we do instead to enjoy that kind of Eurovision atmosphere? So why not, of course, bring on one of the most talked about Eurovision websites in the world, I think we
can say.
I think we can say it. Yes, we have, of course, William from WeeWee Blogs, the founder and editor. Bring on William. Hello, William.
Hello, Laura. Hello, Martin.
Hello. That was a good big up, wasn't it? We did well there.
Was that big enough?
I'm living for the hype. You are professionals.
Professional hype men, yeah. Genuinely, it is great to have you on because you are such a huge influence in the Eurovision sphere. So really great to have a chat with you. WeeWee Blogs have got lots of things planned for the lead up to Eurovision. But I guess I just wanted to chat with you first about how you felt when you heard Eurovision was cancelled this year.
Oh, I don't want to sound dramatic, but it was honestly like a death in the family. Eurovision...
That is quite dramatic.
Yeah. You know, we all knew it was coming, but then when it happened, it really hurt. And I was actually in Belarus a few weeks before with a bunch of HODs judging a show, and they had received an email, and... What's the reverse of hype? You know, dread. Dread was building, because the emails they were receiving from the EBU were kind of open-ended and ambiguous and effectively said, we're monitoring the situation. Yeah. So it was leaving a lot of wiggle room. And at that point, I kind of knew this is not going to happen. And then when it finally did happen, yeah, it just upended everything. You know, like the two of you, I'm sure a lot of my year is built around this trip in May, not just my viewing habits, but also where I'm going to be going the weeks and months before, to the pre-parties, booking hotels, planning interviews, arranging the WeeWee Jam, our big concert at Eurovision, which takes several months. And all of this stuff was full go, full pelt. You know, we were running towards the finish line and we had all these contracts signed and things were happening. And then it's like the tablecloth is pulled out, except you don't pull it quick enough and all the dishes kind of break. And you're like, well, damn, I've got a lot of dishes to clean up. But yeah, we've tried to kind of reset the table, if you will, and do what we can do. Even if we're not having a smorgasbord, we can still have an appetizer, an entree, maybe a dessert. Maybe it is a smorgasbord.
Yeah, that sounds quite nice, actually. And we'll get on to what WeWe Blogs are doing and WeWe Jam and how it is happening, albeit not quite as it normally does. About Eurovision, though, and I think this is the question being asked about a lot of things at the moment, can it recover?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think that people who assume that Eurovision will 100% happen next year as it has in the past are maybe too optimistic. I think until there's a widespread vaccine, we can't really picture events going back to normal. You know, the Olympic Games, there's talk that maybe that will even have to be canceled, you know, even though it's already been postponed for a year. And we, of course, are talking about Eurovision, the Olympics of music. It's a similar comparison. These are sporting events, effectively. People coming together, cheering for nations, big crowds. I hope Eurovision happens next year, but I'm still not convinced it will happen in the same form. I could see a socially distant program, potentially. Mm. No audience, a thinned out audience, instead of a, you know, arena, maybe a studio. It's just too early to tell, to be honest, because vaccine trials are going on. But I guess we have the vaccine trials, but then we have to assume those vaccines will be put into widespread use, which is another layer on all of this, that there's just so much that isn't certain. And I've completely forgotten the question.
I think you answered it. I mean, there's just been so much, hasn't there, for Eurovision in the last 60 years of just building up and getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And you wonder that maybe 2021, if it happens at all, will be maybe much more back to basics, almost like the sort of Eurovision that we saw in the 50s.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I think there's a trend more broadly to take things back to basics. I've been trying to stay off social media while I've been in isolation, and it's been rather nice, actually. I make the most of my hour. I go outside. I leave my computer. And I think that trend will extend to Eurovision. At a time, people are dying, people are ill, hospitals don't have PPE. It is hard to justify cultural events. I totally believe these events bring us together, give people hope. I'm all on board, as are you guys. But at the same time, when push comes to shove, I think we should give nurses protective equipment rather than, I don't know, funding an entertainment extravaganza. And this is coming from me, like you, mega Eurovision fan. And so I hope it doesn't come to the point where things are so dire that we get to that situation. But you know what? If it does come to that, the obvious answer is you support health and well-being, not entertainment. But yes, to your point, a studio Eurovision would be quite nice as well. You know, trying different things. We've had smaller arenas, as in Tel Aviv. We've had bigger arenas, as in Moscow. So maybe this is just a more extreme form of that. You know, the concert hall in Brighton with five seats between every person in the audience. It would be a different flavor, but if Loreen from Sweden taught us anything in 2012, you can cut the audience out and put on a great show. You know, I always say, take me to another universe at Eurovision. Let me forget the crowd. So maybe this will be that in the extreme.
I think, well, exactly. So it'd be interesting to see what they do do. I don't know if you have any inkling yet of that, if they've mentioned anything about plans. I guess they're still looking forward to what they can do really for this year at the moment.
Yeah, I think everything changed so quickly.
Yeah.
People are working really hard at the official organization to make something happen and to make it work as best it can. I think one thing people don't realize is that we say artists and we assume they have a massive team, tons of money, studios at home. This is not the case. Some artists don't want to participate in online concerts or in gatherings because perhaps they don't have access to a studio. Studios are shut where they are. They don't want to film themselves on a phone. Maybe they don't even have the iPhone X. You know, they don't have the fancy phone to record themselves. We make a lot of assumptions about people being able to participate. And so that's something they have to work around as well, because you can't very well send a film crew to someone's house in quarantine. It really varies. Having been to national finals, you know, in Moldova, Latvia, in other countries, you see these really stark comparisons, differences in how they produce music and how they live. So yeah, that's another variable, I think, in this mix. So I see why the EBU and the Dutch organizers were slow to announce things, because this is a nightmare to organize, even in the best case scenario, let alone with a global pandemic.
Also, the sad thing about it not being on this year is that the songs that we all got to love...
I'm calling them the ghost songs.
The ghost songs of Eurovision.
Of 2020.
Yeah, the wider public, you know, aren't going to be aware of them. And I just wondered, which were some of your favourites, really, or which you thought would potentially win?
You know, I always say this, so maybe it's cliche at this point, but I think the winning song often taps into the zeitgeist. There's something in the air that people don't always see or feel, and then that ends up being the winner, like Jamala 1944, obviously the Russia-Ukraine situation, Conchita Wurst.
Sure.
This year, for me, that's Italy. Ooh. I think people have kind of slept on it, but post-COVID-19, the footage we see of people in Italy singing on their balconies, his song, we see how his song's become an anthem. It's become a movement in some ways. Groups of people sing this outside. The meaning, while the song is about love and kind of the unbearable silence when a relationship ends, that kind of fits with death and loss as well. It's not a huge leap. And I think even if you don't speak Italian, when he sings that in a very pared back environment, like in the music video, it's really touching and really gripping. And I know that the announcers at Eurovision would have mentioned that in that little postcard segment. And their words do matter. That can really color someone's thought. And I think that's one that people have kind of forgotten about as we get closer to what would have been the competition. I think that song would have tapped into something bigger than Eurovision. And then, of course, the obvious ones. I think Iceland has fantastic televote appeal. People in Australia, for instance, they view Eurovision as very quirky and out there. And I think Iceland ticks that box as something quirky, fun, party.
Just a bit, yeah.
A small amount, yeah.
And those of us in England, anywhere in the UK really, will understand. You go to a party, you know, the voter isn't necessarily a typical Eurovision fan. They're a random party goer who is drunk and they will respond to Iceland.
Yeah.
It stands out. And then Lithuania, curiously, another take on that. I think the Lithuanian entry, I prefer Lithuania to Iceland. And I think many Eastern Europeans would also have preferred Lithuania to Iceland. Not in the joke sense, because I don't think these are joke acts. I think they're quirky. And then Russia. I think in the televote, Russia would have smashed it, actually.
Yeah.
Because cross-continental appeal, so out there. Making fun of entertainment cliches, the intensity of the performer, you know, the gimmicky dance, the staging was very ABBA 1974. You know, they were taking the piss out of everything, and I like that. I get so bored of everyone trying to win the jury. It's like, it's okay to have fun.
Oh, definitely.
It's okay.
Oh, we are well
we
with you
it.
There.
Yeah, we welcome
very
it.
With you there.
Let's talk about Wee Wee Jam, because every year you throw it, and obviously 2020, it's happening in a very, very different way.
Oh, man, Martin, I'm so upset about this.
Well, so are we.
Thank you. You, of course, would be welcome guest, VIP, up there with the stars. The two
we're writing
of you.
This down now. We're
no,
right,
honestly,
write it down.
2021, yeah, I'm going to see you there backstage. This event, it's like, in 2016, we threw our first one. We didn't know what would happen. And the tickets sold out in like, it was hours. And it was like trending in Sweden. We were like, what the heck is happening? In 2018, the tickets went again very quickly. Last year, there was a line around the block. It's just crazy. And the reason I think it's popular is you go to a Eurovision concert, you can smell the artist sweating on the stage just a few meters away. Maybe that's not so appropriate in social distancing times, but you get that sense of closeness and people aren't competing. They're just having fun. It's in the middle of Eurovision. So, you know, the first semifinal has already taken place. The second semifinal is the following day because we always have it on the Wednesday between. And so you're in the competition, but people are stepping away from that. The stars are getting drunk on the balcony. Let me tell you, we have to sometimes intervene. Okay, y'all need to put down the champagne. All right, unless you're paying for it. It's just, yeah, it's a beautiful night. And I'm really, really sad. We had booked out a massive club. Hopefully they will still be there next year. And the performers come, they sing their back catalog sometimes, they sing new songs, they cover other artists' songs, they say things they shouldn't say, we have interviews on stage, and they do this because they want to give back to their fans, they want to say thank you for following us this whole time, and while, you know, they're like 1,500, 2,000 people in clubs usually, it's at capacity, but it's still quite intimate in a way, because everyone is silent, everyone is listening, And it's not like Euroclub, where often you have to be accredited to go, this concert's for the people, for the fans. So you can't afford a Eurovision ticket, that's okay. You can afford this ticket, which is like 10 euro or whatever, to come here. And so it democratizes Eurovision in a weird way. It's a nightmare to put on, to be honest. It's really stressful because oftentimes we arrive 2 weeks before Eurovision and we're literally sleeping 3 hours a night, recording videos nonstop, attending every rehearsal. And then we somehow squeeze in this concert, which requires sound checks for the 20 plus artists, which requires taxis for the artists, which requires, you know, security. You have to people trying to get tickets, ticket machines not working. There's all this stuff going on. So it's incredibly, incredibly stressful. But we do it because that connection, it's an all access pass, I guess. You don't have to have a press pass to be at this party. And I think a lot of events at Eurovision, unfortunately, do have that whole accreditation barrier. And obviously, for practical reasons, they have to do that. But I just wish more fans could attend these quote-unquote insider events. Why shouldn't you be able to party with your stars?
They've got a Eurovision Village, but that's just screenings, isn't it? It's not, you know, it's true. There's the Euroclub, there's Eurovision Village for the fans, but that's just showing what's going on. There isn't really many of the actual artists on during that time, which is mad, really, you think, because they're there.
They'll appear behind, like, the barrier, sing their song, and then, you know, they're ferried off.
And then run away, yeah.
Because it's such a vast outdoor space, I guess for security, it's got different concerns. Mm. But yeah, I was really gutted. Last year in Tel Aviv, I'm babbling, sorry. Why am I babbling? What was I even going to say? Because it's so bright today. Oh, I was going
to
say,
don't forget to plug what you're doing.
Yeah,
yes. There we go.
You can tell us about Tel Aviv in a moment.
Perfect. The wee-wee, yes. So when Eurovision was canceled, I was like, what can we do? Like, is it rude to put something on? At first, I thought maybe it'd be inappropriate to have a Wee-Wee Jam. Why should we be celebrating when there are people ill, when people are quarantined? But then watching what was happening in Italy is really what changed my mind. When I saw people singing on balconies, people want to enjoy the music still. They want to feel connected. And it's like we have, over the years, built up these connections with the broadcasters and the record labels. We can just email them directly and invite them. Why not? And I know that some people can't record a full-on song, but maybe they can send a message even, or, you know, just sing an acoustic snippet. And so I started small, just thinking we'll get some acoustic snippets. But then artists started sending in, you know, 3-minute performances, 6-minute performances, 9-minute performances.
And it's always the way, isn't it, with guests amazing. Or interviewees. You ask for like 30 seconds and they'll send you a whole album.
And I'm just so grateful. It's like snowballed. And so now we've just been asking everybody, and people have been remarkably receptive. And, you know, I'm really pleased we can get Eurovision 2020 stars, obviously, because they deserve a moment. They deserve as much attention as they can get. And also people from the past who maybe had their moment taken from them. So I'm really thrilled that we have Maruv from Ukraine singing a song at the Wee-Wee Jam. And I'm not sure she's done a home concert anywhere, actually. And it's just a beautiful message that, you know, you come into the Eurovision orbit and you're still there, even if you didn't go.
So that's all happening on May the 13th. That's right.
Absolutely. The evening of May 13th, in between what would have been the semifinals. This is on the Wee-Wee Blogs YouTube channel. If you follow us on Instagram, we're posting constantly who the artists are. It's a pre-recorded concert, obviously, and then we set it to premiere. And we haven't finalized the time because we don't know how many artists we'll end up having, but it'll probably be around 8 CET. That's 8 p.m. CET, but follow us on social to know the exact time. Yay!
Excellent. Wonderful. We will, and we will be watching along.
Thank you so much. And we're going to be commenting live in the YouTube premiere, and some of the artists will also be commenting live in the YouTube premiere.
Well, looking forward to that. And I've got to ask, really, because you mentioned, you know, these kind of wild times you have sometimes backstage at these Eurovision events. Just a sort of favourite memory or a memory of a sort of mad thing that's happened in your time as a huge sort of Eurovision, I don't know, reporter, presenter?
Oh, I always
You
go
must
blank.
See some crazy things during
I mean, you see that if you just watch the TV show. So what must it be
exactly.
like backstage?
Eurovision itself is quite an interesting event. So I'd be interested to what might happen backstage at these kind of things.
One of the funniest things, and anyone who attended Eurovision last year, or many people will remember this, is that Kate Miller-Heidke had to sort of be forklifted onto the stage.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, she was up in the air with these massive stilt things. So during Switzerland's performance before hers, I think that it was Was it the grand final? I think it was the semifinal, actually. You see her stage right on this forklift, basically. It's the talk about a grand entrance. It is the craziest construction site entrance ever. And we have a video on our Instagram. Luca Hani's doing his thing, and then our girl's just in the sky, in the rafters, waiting to be wheeled on. The tension that must build in her, like, it must be nerve-wracking enough to be backstage standing on the ground, let alone... Yeah. 3 meters in the air, whatever it was. And then another disaster, you know, on the Wee Wee Jam stage, it ends up looking like we have our act together, but it's a hot mess. You've got artists arrive. It's a very quick turnaround. They arrive. They have 3 minutes to walk. They need to get their earpiece. They need to be on stage. It's like a conveyor belt. And then you've got 1,300, 1,400 people in between you. So an artist arrived. I'm on stage. Someone tells me the next artist is Mickey from Spain. So I'm like, okay, great. And I'm like hyping Lavinda. I'm like, oh my God, are you guys ready, Lavinda? Oh my God, get ready. Blah, blah, blah. He is coming. Here he is, Mickey. And then I turned around. It wasn't Mickey. It was Imri from Israel. And so then he's looking at me like, what? It's just, you know, there's just these funny moments happen. And
it must be crazy to have to, you might be glad to have like a year off from that maybe a little bit.
You know, it's interesting you say that because I was thinking, what can I do during these 2 weeks? And so I got that book by the Japanese cleaning expert, Marie Kondo.
Oh, Marie Kondo, yeah.
Because I had watched the Netflix series, you know. Yeah, I need to tidy. And so a part of me is like, I will make the most of this. I will organize. I've actually been organizing tat from past Eurovisions because Marie Kondo is all about give stuff away, you know, recycle, throw away. So that's what I'm going to do. So I'll be mailing CDs very soon.
Getting Eurovision good. Tat.
Well, William, it's been absolutely brilliant to meet you and chat with you. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast and best of luck for the 13th.
Yes.
Thank you, guys. So nice to talk to you. It's really good that you're letting people know everything that's going on. We really appreciate it. And it's nice to have it all in one place. I'm going to be listening to this to remind myself what to do on those nights. So thank you.
Well, yes, thank you very, very much to William for that. We really, really appreciate it. Please do go and check out Wee Wee Blogs, and all of the information is there that you need if you want to get involved with the Wee Wee Jam this year. If you are interested in hearing a little bit more from us two yabbering on, and you're interested, we did a podcast a little while ago called Coronavirus and Our 2020 Songs to Watch. That is great if you want our thoughts on some of the standout Eurovision performances that we've had our eye on.
That's right, and you can look at that. It's on our SoundCloud, it's on Spotify, it's on iTunes, all the major things.
All the things.
Just go search Noel Poir, and as you said, that title, Coronavirus and Our Ones to Watch, and it's just got all our ideas and thoughts on who would have won, really. Mm.
And who definitely wouldn't have won as well. We talk about that too. Thank you very much for listening. If you want to get in touch, it would be lovely to hear from you. We're all over social media. We are on Gmail, nullpoirpodcast@gmail.com. The Twitter.
On Twitter, we're at Poir Null, just to confuse you. And that's POINTSNUL. And we are also on Instagram. Nearly forgot what the other one was, but it's Instagram.
Well done. And what is it?
And that's Noel Poir. Noel Poir Podcast.
Expertly done, as usual.
Thank you, as always. We will be back. This will not be the last of Noel Poir.
No, we will be returning once the big shows have gone out, the ESAL and all of that, to give our thoughts on that. So we shall return. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you very soon.
Ta-ta. Oh, thank goodness this isn't live.